today on Ag News Daily.
Take a moment in time and showcase the ongoing work that we're doing on behalf of America's dairy farm families.
Happy Friday, Ag News Daily listeners. We've got Delaney Howell on the call as well as Madison Honkamp and Mike Pearson for today's Friday episode. And Mike and I did an interview this morning with the CEO of Midwest Dairy because National Dairy Month starts tomorrow. Madison and Mike, you guys better support them and eat as much ice cream and milk and cheese as you possibly can.
Delaney, I tell you what, I am a step ahead of the curve because I care so deeply for America's dairy farmers. Mm-hmm. I had ice cream for breakfast, and I just had some delicious Casey's Pizza, which is known for its cheesiness.
Yes, that's true. Lunch. That's true.
Madison, what are you doing to make America's dairy stronger?
Well, you know, I use milk in my coffee every morning, and I think we go through about 2 gallons a week at my house. So, yeah, my brother drinks at least a gallon a day. So
that's crazy.
Good for him. Is he drinking 2% whole milk, 1%? Surely he's not a skim drinker.
2%.
Good for him. Good for him. Delaney drinks him.
No, I've changed. I've changed. I drink 1 or 2% now.
Well, good for you. Good for you. We're working. We're getting you stepped up. It won't be too long. You'll be sucking down just whole fat buttermilk like it's going out of style.
I can't do whole milk or buttermilk, but I can do 2%. I don't taste that much of a difference. Whole milk, I really do.
My little sister has put cream in her cereal for years.
Whole milk is just like too thick.
Yeah, that's how I feel too.
No. You people are so wrong, it's sad. What is wrong with the youth of today?
It's good in, like, coffee, but I can't drink it just whole milk.
It's good in, like, cooking. I would use it for cooking all the time. It's good in, like, Alfredo sauces or homemade ice cream, but drinking it straight, I can't do.
Oh, my gosh. What are we going to do with you two? What? Well, I'm going to put tariffs on you two until you start drinking whole milk.
That's ironic because it sounds like President Trump is threatening to put another round of tariffs on Mexico.
Yes, and not threatening. I believe these are expected to go into place. It is a 5% tariff effective almost immediately, if not already in place today, that is going to increased. Yes.
I think they don't go into effect until June 5th or June 6th.
Oh, 10th. Yeah, 10th. You're right. You're right. I'm sorry. Okay. You're right. But then they are going to increase until, quote, Mexico gets a handle on illegal migrants crossing through that country into the U.S.
Yeah. So that puts kind of a monkey wrench into the whole USMCA agreement. We did see the administration kickstart the official process because there's a lot of hoops they have to jump through on the U.S. side, as well as we also have to see it being, you know, finalized and implemented on Mexico and Canada's fronts. But the Trump administration is kickstarting it for the U.S. specifically. Essentially, what they have to do is start a 30-day clock for Capitol Hill to come to some sort of agreement on implementing the legislation. Then, after that's done, we have another 30 days for the White House to submit a bill to ratify that agreement, ratify what Congress suggests. And I think from there, I assume Congress will have to vote on it again. The president will have to sign off on it. So we're closer, I guess.
Yeah, we're closer from the U.S. front, but like you said, these tariffs going on to effect in Mexico will certainly make them rethink their decision to support it, which they had been fairly wholehearted supporters and working to change some of their domestic legislation to accommodate it. But I'm guessing now that'll be put on hold.
I'm guessing you're right.
We also had, just to circle back to the tariff news from this morning, Iowa Senator Chuck Grassley took to Twitter to really kind of lash out at President Trump. Senator Grassley is, of course, a Republican, one of the longest-serving Republicans in the Senate, and he said this is a terrible use of – it's an abuse of presidential tariff powers, and he is conflating two issues, immigration and trade policy, that are separate issues, and he was very, very disappointed to see this announcement from President Trump.
Yeah, and I think that China issued another round of tariffs. I think they go into effect this weekend or next weekend.
They went into effect, in fact, at midnight Beijing time, which was earlier this morning, okay. I believe.
All right.
Just about $60 billion on U.S. products going into China.
And it sounds like the USDA has accounted for that. They just released their latest predictions for agricultural exports for fiscal year 2019. And overall, they're showing we're still going to have a trade surplus in agricultural exports, but it's going to be the lowest in quite some time. Going to see about an $8 billion surplus is what they're predicting right now. And dropping the latest export forecast to about $137 billion, which is down 3.2% from their February outlook. It's largely due, and I think this comes as no surprise, because of the weaker soybean demand from China, potentially weaker hog demand, even with African swine fever, they're saying. And soybeans are really the driver this year. China is expected to only import about $6.5 billion worth in goods, and usually they're somewhere about $17 to $24 billion.
Wow. So, yeah, we lost almost $10 billion. Yeah. And then the wild card is, of course, we know a lot of this is due to the tariffs being, since they've been in effect a year now. Right. But we probably would have lost some export demand just because of, Delaney, you've talked about it all the time on the podcast, the spread of African swine fever.
Yes. And I saw a report today, I was reading through some market commentary that says North Korea has also had confirmed cases of ASF.
Yeah, well, you know, it's North Korea, yeah. I guess. Huh. I'm glad they still have hogs in North Korea. I thought they were all eating shoes.
That's nice.
I say that jokingly, but yeah. It's also, you know, I'm glad they've still got hogs. It's really sad for that country that now they're going to die.
But they're going to die because they don't have hogs?
Well, the hogs are going to die because they have African swine fever.
Right, okay. It's a little confusing.
I mean, I don't think... Listeners, if I'm wrong, correct me. I'm going off sort of general knowledge here, but I don't think North Korea has a huge hog herd.
No, I wouldn't think so.
They do have issues with famine quite frequently in that country. So I imagine they've eaten their breeding stock in years past.
I imagine you're probably correct, Mike.
Well, Delaney, I tell you what. You know, tomorrow is June 1st. Am I right?
Yes. It's National Dairy
You know,
Dairy
I'm
Month.
Very... you're right, of course. Jizz June 1st. You know what I'm very excited to do on June 1st of 2019?
Not a clue.
I am going to take my 78 Lincoln to a gas pump,
yes.
One of the local convenience stores, and what?
I know what you're going to say.
What am I going to fuel up with?
You're going to fuel up with E15 because we saw it finally pass for year-round sales. Just in front of the deadline, of course.
Yeah, literally 12 hours or 15 hours in front of the deadline tonight at midnight. Gas pumps were supposed to quit selling E15 due to some reed vapor pressure issues. The National Corn Growers and really every farm group has been pressuring EPA to change that and lift those restrictions. Today it was announced by the EPA that they are lifted. E15 is now cleared for year-round sales in this country. The hope is that this will encourage more gas stations, more retailers to put in E15 pumps and help us grind that ethanol demand a little bit higher.
Absolutely. Madison, we've been doing a lot of talking. Do you have any news?
I have the E15 being passed, which is kind of crazy because it is before the deadline, even though it's a couple not that far before the deadline. But that was the main thing I had.
Yeah, it's a big win for U.S. agriculture, that's for sure.
Mm-hmm. Yes, definitely.
You know, it's a win. Time will tell how big of a win it could end up being, but it is a win, and we are desperately, desperately seeking wins in agriculture in 2019. Mm-hmm. So
yes.
We'll take it.
That we are. It seems like one win we're getting, though, is definitely – the commodity prices. Today we had a little bit of a pullback, but I had some news and an update on the new assistance package program. Secretary Perdue was apparently in Pennsylvania on Thursday and told reporters, or really didn't tell reporters in this case, that Prevent Plant Acres are completely off the table as being eligible for the new assistance package.
Oh, well, this is a big wild card.
It is. He said, we're trying to be as opaque as possible, not trying to skew with the market. And he didn't say, he never explicitly said prevent plant acres aren't on the table. And it sounds like reporters really tried to hound him to get some sort of answer on that point.
Wow. Okay. So I guess, you know, per our conversation with Scott Irwin last week, we just have to sit and wait until USDA issues clarifications on this thing.
Yeah, that's really, unfortunately, what it sounds like is going to happen, is just wait. So I think that really they're not kidding when they say whatever you should be doing or would be doing, that's what you should do this time of year.
But then that just means people are going to get upset when they do announce these things that could have been easily changed, you know, planting decisions. We could have made these decisions in time to better take advantage of the assistance package that we're not going to take.
I know. It's frustrating.
Ugh. Quit with the tariffs. Quit with the government programs, Uncle Sam.
The government, isn't that what you called it the other day?
Let the market work.
Yeah.
Huh?
The government.
Government.
Mm-hmm.
Government with a B.
Yeah, nice.
That's how you say it.
Okay.
All right. Well, yes, that is definitely some news. So we'll continue to keep it on as we get updates on the MFP program 2.0. We'll be sure to share it with you guys, our listeners. And I think we'll just have to continue to add clarity to this thing as time goes along.
I just think it's very convenient that he said it just yesterday. And it's like, okay, now we're really starting to hit the wall of when guys have to decide or gals have to decide, are they going to take prevent plant? Are they going to try and force a crop in later? I mean, I think today is Iowa's insurance day.
I think you're right.
Yeah. At least for corn acres. Right. So who knows what's going to happen on that front, but.
Well, corn prices didn't do a whole lot to encourage guys to get more acres in the ground today, but neither did soybeans. Madison, if you're out of news, and Delaney, if you're out of news, what do you say? Should we talk markets?
I do have one other quick update. I thought this was an interesting article I read this morning on Politico talking about why Senator Chip Roy, who is that freshman senator who held up the disaster aid package, decided to essentially hold it up. He was apparently on his way back home because, of course, they were heading into recess, got a call or heard that they were trying to force this through on a voice vote, and canceled his flight and headed back to the Capitol. He said he's gotten an enormous amount of support recently from his district, people writing in, emails, text messages. He essentially, the reasoning behind it is he said if you're objecting to the disaster, he knows he's going to be tarred and feathered, and people will call him evil, but he wanted lawmakers to vote on the record, and he said when they hear things like this that happen without members here to vote, it's part of what earns this city the reputation as the swamp, and also said that it was important that they all should be able to have some sort of discussion instead of just forcing this through. That was kind of his reasoning on all of it. So, you know,
the person in me who at one point wanted to be a high school civics teacher really respects that. I think he's exactly right. I think we do need to have more votes on the record, get these Congress critters to actually put their names on the line and stand behind things they support or don't support. But at the same time, man, pick a different bill, you know, to make your stand.
Yeah.
There are people out here hurting.
I know. And I think he realizes that, but, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, there's always going to be somebody hurt by legislation, I suppose.
Right.
All right. Well, we'll continue to keep an eye on that. They resume, what, first week in June, Delaney?
I think they come back. So this week is the first week in June. I think they come back a couple days after that, either end of next week or the following week.
Okay, so they get, like, a week's break.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we'll keep track on that $19 billion disaster aid program once the House is back in session.
That we will.
All right. Well, let's jump into the markets here before we get to our conversation with Lucas Lynch. And our markets are brought to us by our great friends at the Zahner Group. Folks, we continue to see volatility. We're up big one day, we're down big the next. That can create great opportunities if you're managing your risks correctly. Do that with help from our friends at the Zahner Group. Give them a shout at 312-277-0050 or visit them on the web at Zahner, Zahner.com, and tell them you heard it on Ag News Daily. Well, it is red pretty much across the board today, grains and meats. There is little green to be seen. In the corn market, July was down 9.25 at 427 even. The December was down 8.5 cents, closed at 443.75. Soybeans took it on the chin with the July contract down 11.25 at 877.75. November new crop down 10.75 to finish the day at 904.75. In Chicago wheat, the July was off 11.5 cents, finished at 503 even. September down 12.5 cents, finished the day at 509.75. Jumping over to the world of livestock, we did not see any strength provided by this weakness in the grain markets. Live cattle, feeder cattle, and lean hogs all lower on the day. June live cattle down $1.60 at 108.47.50. The August down $1.97.5, finished at 103.07.50. And feeder cattle, big losers, trading on expanded limits after yesterday's limit down move. The August contract was down $5.10 to close at $133.12.50. The September down $4.45 to finish at $134.07.50. And in lean hogs, the June contract was down $1.95, closed at $81.72.5. The July also down $1.95 to finish the day at $85.92.50. As we kick off National Dairy Month, let's see what happened in the dairy market. We got a little bit of a tailwind today. Really, the only green in the markets today is in Class 3 milk. The June contract was up 2 cents at $16.20, with the July also up 2 cents to close at $16.62. Without further ado, let's build on this excitement in the dairy industry by talking to Lucas Lynch, the CEO of Midwest Dairy. Well, folks, tomorrow begins the month of June, which, of course, is National Dairy Month. To help us kick things off here on the podcast, we are joined by the CEO of Midwest Dairy, Mr. Lucas Lynch. Lucas, how you doing today?
Hey, Mike, I'm doing great. Glad to be with you.
Now, bring us up to speed for our listeners who are outside the dairy industry. Maybe they've never heard of Midwest Dairy. What is it you guys do, and who do you represent?
Sure. Well, Midwest Dairy is the promotion, research, and education arm that works on behalf of Midwest Dairy farm families. There's about 7,000 farm families across 10 states, but really we're part of the dairy promotion system or dairy checkoff system that's nationwide. And so there are states and regions like Midwest Dairy all across the country, and we're part of Dairy Management Incorporated, our national office of dairy promotion, research, and education.
So we kick off National Dairy Month tomorrow, and we have National Beef Month and National Dairy Month, but what is the reasoning behind having these dedicated months to celebrate the dairy industry?
You know, it's really just a great opportunity to take a moment in time and showcase the ongoing work that we're doing on behalf of America's dairy farm families working with today's consumers. And this year, National Dairy Month, we are really focusing in on the food insecure and how our farm families are supporting the very mechanisms that bring food insecure families access to the robust profile of dairy nutrition. And there's nothing more valuable to a family in need than a gallon of milk or that wonderful cheese or yogurt or that they might need access to. And we know they call it liquid gold within the food pantry. Because one out of five Americans, and we all know somebody, whether we realize it or not, somebody that's in our lives is food insecure. And this year's National Dairy Month is really focused in on the work that we do to bring home dairy goodness to our families in need.
And Lucas, when you say food insecure, just to clarify, are you saying folks that don't have access to food or can't afford those goods?
Sure. Well, it can be food deserts where they may not have access to the food. There can also be a situation where just financially there's more month at the end of the money, so to speak. And as a result, there's just not enough food in the grocery store or in the refrigerator at home. And those food insecure families go to a food pantry, go to a place to receive the donation and the gift of food. And again, one in five American families are food insecure. And the need is high, and what's great is that dairy is uniquely positioned to fill that institutional need that's across the country.
Well, Lucas, let's talk a little bit about how America's dairy families are helping address this food insecurity. Is it mainly coming through donations of cooperatives and processors? How does this need get filled, especially as we talk about National Dairy Month?
You know, there's a couple of different models out there. One in particular is the Milk to My Plate program, and it's really a direct purchase model where the processor who has the milk and is able to contract with a food pantry who has raised the dollars to direct purchase that milk. And where Midwest Dairy comes into play is we issue grants to those food pantries to ensure they have the refrigeration assets in order to take custody of that cold chain of a dairy product. So that would be one way. And again, that's called Milk to My Plate. Another one is Give a Gallon. Tremendous programs out there where Give a Gallon is where consumers can engage and provide dairy nutrition to neighbors in need, basically. And so that Give a Gallon program really gives consumers a chance to engage in that space. And one that I'm particularly proud of is Pints to Gallons. We've seen this in Nebraska. Guys, there are 5 Nebraska schools where basically kids have taken pints home, basically cardboard corrugated pints, and filled them with spare change. And in 5 schools in the state of Nebraska, they raised $11,000 basically to give to families in need for the purchase of dairy products. And so there's many different ways for consumers and others to engage in this space. But National Dairy Month is a chance for us to really highlight those programs.
Absolutely. It looks like you guys are going to do a great lineup of events over the month of June here. But I want to ask, from a dairy producer's perspective, they've also been having, you know, a pretty challenging time. Hopefully none of them are food insecure, but they've definitely been feeling the effects of market fundamentals and trade and low commodity prices. What are you doing this year to help boost the spirits of the dairy industry also?
Well, clearly, the dairy farmers have been carrying more than their fair share of the load when it comes to the pressures on agriculture, especially now coming really into our 4th and 5th year of it. Right off the bat, we know that the most important thing that we can be doing for our farmers is making sure consumers continue to have access to innovative and creative new products that are resonating with today's consumers. There's so many imitation products out there right now, and the messaging around dairy and dairy nutrition couldn't be more important, because in an environment where free from claims, fear-based marketing has really eroded consumer confidence, dairy has to hold the position of being on the high road that everybody is trying to attack and replicate. I mean, you can turn on television and see everybody trying to be like dairy. And the reason is farmers have paid for and earned that halo of high-profile nutrition. That's why everybody's trying to be like us. If imitation is the greatest form of flattery, it's coming at us every day. And so what we need to be doing to ensure market access for our farmers is, yes, there's the international work of U.S. Dairy Export Council, but there's also the work that we do each and every day around Undeniably Dairy, working with and through the retailers that face consumers, making sure that they have a dairy case that is properly stocked with the demands of today's consumers, and not over-indexing shelf space to the alternatives and being out of stock on whole milk. And so there's a lot of things that we're doing that are in the mechanics, if you will, of making sure consumers have an excellent dairy experience, but making sure they have access to a diverse and really, really well-positioned dairy portfolio that's being produced today by today's processors.
Well, and then, Lucas, I want to kind of follow up on that just a little bit. When we think about what today's consumer demands, you know, we've talked on this podcast, and of course, we've heard it in the industry, overall demand for fluid milk has been on the decline in this country for a little while, but we do see consumers continuously turning to dairy for ice cream, for cheeses, in particular for yogurt. What are some of the hot products today, as you kick off the month of June, that consumers are really gravitating towards?
Yeah, well, one of the great ones, and I think it's just an incredibly important bright spot, although fluid milk, as you said, has had really a 40-year decline, there is no question that whole milk is back. And what I mean by that is it is growing month over month faster than the entire alternative beverage category combined. It's amazing. And the fact is that milk fat is back. In all the diet fads, dairy is uniquely positioned to be a great partner in maintaining the satiety of a whole milk product, especially when we're dealing with our young people, especially with a child that's growing in those early years of development. Milk fat is key, and that's why I think whole milk is absolutely back on the radar of today's consumers. But I also think that as a population, here's one for you. You know, we eat, as Americans, about 36 pounds of cheese a year. I know that sounds like a lot. And you might think, we must be getting close to being tapped out. Well, if you go to Europe, they actually consume over 70 pounds of cheese per person per year.
Holy cow.
So, I mean, the reality is that there's lots of opportunity to fill not only our U.S. growing demand, but also internationally. And as we look at these Asian markets, you know, when one Chinese family eats a pizza one out of every 45 days, and there's 1.4 billion, guess what happens if you get that to be one in 30 days they're having a pizza? That's a whole lot more pizza cheese going into China. So that's why that market access is so vitally important to our producers.
Absolutely. So, Lucas, let's chat about a couple of the big events that you guys have coming up over the month of June. I know you sent out quite a list of different events happening and things you're working on besides the food insecure thing. Will you share some of those with us and our listeners?
Sure. Well, actually, kicking off here on June 1st, we're partnering as Midwest Dairy with Deerberg's Markets, and really on Operation Food Search in St. Louis. It's going to be a great program where we help to reduce the risk of children going undernourished during the summer months by really driving dairy donations. That'll kick off with the Real Love Convoy at the Deerberg Markets on June 1st, and it's going to be just a fantastic opportunity for the Undeniably Dairy Truck to really carry the conversation. So when consumers go into the De Pere's location in St. Louis, they'll be able to really enjoy that Real Love Convoy and be able to see how they can give forward to supporting those children during the summer months. Another one that's coming up, if you go over to South Dakota, Doug Odie, just a great guy, Royalwood Farms and Greg Mose of Modak Dairy, they're going to be hosting open houses but collecting donations at each event for Feeding South Dakota. So dairy farmers hosting on-farm breakfast where consumers can come and learn more about on-farm production practices but also turn around and give it forward or pay it forward to the food insecure. And then lastly, if you're a football fan, of course, you get into the Illinois marketplace or across the country here, there's a lot of Chicago Bears fans. And this year in particular, they're celebrating their 100th anniversary. Hard to believe. Chicago Bears, 100th anniversary, and they have their Fantennial going on June 8th through the 9th. And so it's a lot of football fans, but also a consumer-rich environment like the Chicago marketplace that we're getting access to face those consumers and talk about dairy and dairy nutrition.
That is fantastic. And, of course, just a week ago, we saw some great promotion of dairy at the end of the Indianapolis 500.
Yeah. I tell you what, they do it really well in Indianapolis. Good friends over there, the dairy farmers of Indiana, can be really proud of their tradition of the Indianapolis 500. I don't know that you could have much better milk imagery or quotes from a driver like you do, but that's what they do every year. And it started because a driver way back in the 1930s requested a glass of buttermilk, and that has been a tradition ever since.
That's neat.
Well, milk is and especially whole milk, Delaney.
Yes.
I don't know if you caught it when Lucas said that whole milk demand has been skyrocketing. Fat is back in style. It is good for you. It fills you up, and it's just a great way to refresh.
Absolutely. And you know what? You got to remember to talk about that stuff because, you know, if we think we're always in a spot where the market's slipping out from underneath us, we got to remember we've held the high ground for a long time. We don't need to give it up. In fact, the best thing that we can do for ourselves is grow, innovate, and become the competition. Be better, because we are dairy, we are agriculture, and we can do this. And I'm very proud to represent the farm families that are investing in this work and are a part of this country's food chain.
Awesome. Lucas, I couldn't have said it better myself. Thank you so much for sharing about National Dairy Month with our listeners. And if they have any questions or want to check out those events again, where can they go to find those out?
you know, you can always come to MidwestDairy.com. You got DairyGood.org as well. And Milk to My Plate is another great an opportunity. As you search up those words, Milk to My Plate or Give a Gallon, you can see the coordination from the milk processors nationally to the farmers locally.
Awesome. Well, Lucas, again, a big thank you. I'm excited to celebrate National Dairy Month myself.
Thank you. Hey, raise a glass and let's celebrate our farmers. They're the unsung heroes of all of this, and we thank them for what they do.
Well, there we've got it, folks. Lots of reasons to be excited about dairy. You can never go wrong with cheeses, with yogurts, with fluid milk, which we all need to do our part and drink a lot more of, or, of course, with my personal favorite, ice cream.
Mine too.
Madison?
Oh, yeah, of course.
Okay. All right. Good. Just want to double check. Want to make sure, you know, we like having you on the team, but if you are not an ice cream fan, we might have to revisit.
Yeah. Ice cream and steak, those are really my two deal breakers, like in a significant other and a friend. Oh, if you don't like those two things, I'm not sure we're the best fit.
That's kind of true, yeah. I feel like that's how it is for me, too.
Mike?
Which two things?
Ice cream and steak. Those are deal breakers.
What do you mean?
They have to like those two things.
Oh, yes. I thought you were trying to figure out where you would fit them. Obviously, you'd have the steak first, followed up with a vegetable.
No. Obviously.
Right, because that's what we do.
Right, I know, but I'm saying if somebody didn't like those two things, I'd have to second think about either dating them or being their friend.
Oh, they'd be dead to me, and I would call the CIA on them because they are probably terrorists.
Well, I'm sure that none of our Agnes Daily listeners are non-ice cream or steak fans.
I don't know. Maybe we've got some listeners over there in the Taliban.
Oh, geez.
That are, you know, who knows?
Oh, goodness.
We're happy to have all of their downloads, but we're not going to hang out with non-steak, non-ice cream eaters.
Yeah, probably not. But we can hang out with them anytime on social media. Don't tell us if you're not an ice cream or steak eater, but we'll interact with you just the same. You can hit us up on Facebook and on Twitter at AgNewsDaily, or you can listen to any of our past episodes. Head to agnewsdaily.com. It's probably the easiest way to do that. Just bookmark that. Gets you to our new site there at Global Ag Network. Madison, Mike, with that, should we let the people go?
Let's let them go.
Let them go.